Chapter 10. The Cat of Bubastes. For several days, upon paying their morning visit to the birds and other pets in the enclosure in the garden, Kebron and Maissa had observed an unusual timidity among them. They must have been alarmed at something, Kebron said the third morning. Some bird of prey must have been swooping down upon them. See here, there are several feathers scattered about, and some of them are stained with blood. It may be a hawk or a weasel. We must try to put a stop to it. Amuba and I will watch tomorrow with our bows and arrows and see if we cannot put an end to the marauder. Upon the following morning, Kebron and Amuba went down to the enclosure soon after daybreak, and concealing themselves in some shrubs, waited for the appearance of the intruder. For an hour there was no sign of an enemy. Then one of the birds gave a sudden cry of alarm, and there was a sudden flutter as all rushed to shelter among the reeds. But before the last could get within cover, a dark object shot down from above. There was a frightened cry and a violent flapping as a large hawk suddenly seized one of the waterfowl and struck it to the ground. In an instant the watchers rose to their feet, and as the hawk rose with its prey in its talons, they shot their arrows almost simultaneously. Amuba's arrow struck the hawk between the wings, and the creature fell dead, still clutching its prey. Kebron's arrow was equally well aimed, but it struck a twig, which deflected its course, and it flew wide of the mark. Amuba gave a shout of triumph and leaped out from among the bushes. But he paused and turned, as an exclamation of alarm broke from Kebron. To Amuba's astonishment, he saw a look of horror on his companion's face. Kebron's bow was still outstretched, and he stood as if petrified. "What's the matter, Kebron? Do you not see?" "I see nothing," Amuba replied, looking around. "My arrow, it glanced off a twig and entered there. I saw one of the cats fall. I must have killed it." Amuba had been long enough in Egypt to know how serious were the consequences of such an act. Better by far that Kebron's arrow had lodged in the heart of a man. To kill a cat, even by accident, was the most unpardonable offense an Egyptian could commit. Knowing this, he realized at once the terrible import of Kebron's words. For a moment, he felt almost as stunned as Kebron, but he quickly recovered his presence of mind. "There is only one thing to be done, Kebron. We must dig a hole and bury it at once." Throwing down his bow and arrows, he ran to the little shed at the other end of the garden where the implements were kept. He soon rejoined Kebron, who had not moved from the spot from which he had shot the unlucky arrow. "Do you think this is best, Amuba? Don't you think I had better go and tell my father?" "I do not think so, Kebron. Upon any other matter, it would be right at once to confer with him, but as high priest, it would be a fearful burden to place upon his shoulders."
"I dare not go in," Kebron said in awestruck tones. "It is too terrible."
So Amuba crossed the open space alone, and entering a thick bush beyond the cat house, dug a deep hole. Then he went into the house. Lying upon the ground, he saw the largest of the cats pierced through by Kebron's arrow. Drawing out the shaft, he lifted the animal and took it to the hole he had dug. He leveled the soil carefully over it and scattered a few dead leaves on the top. And then he said to himself, "There, no one would notice that, but it's awfully unlucky it's that cat of all the others." Then he went in, carefully erased the marks of blood upon the floor, and took the shaft of the arrow down to the pond, and carefully washed the blood from it. He then returned to Kebron.
"Is it?"
the latter asked as he approached. He did not say more, but Amuba understood him.
"I am sorry to say it is," he replied. "It is horribly unlucky, for one of the others might not have been missed. There's no hoping that now."
Kebron seemed paralyzed at the news.
"Come, Kebron," Amuba said. "It will not do to give way to fear. We must brave it out. I will leave the door of the cat house open, and when the cat is missed, it will be thought that it has wandered away. There is no reason why suspicion should fall upon us, and if we find that suspicions are entertained, we will get out of the way. You had nothing to do with it, Kebron said. There is no reason why you should take all this risk with me. We were both in the matter, Kebron, and that twig might just as well have turned my arrow from its course as yours. We went to kill a hawk together, and we have shot a cat, and it is a terrible business, there is no doubt. If it is found out, it is certain death, and we shall need all our wits to save our lives. But unless you pluck up courage and look a little more like yourself, we may as well go at once and say what has happened and take the consequences.
I will tell my father, Kebron said suddenly, and I'll abide by what he says. I am sure I can never face this out by myself, and that my looks will betray us.
Very well. I will not try to dissuade you, and I will go and see Jethro. He will understand, and if we fly, he will accompany us. Upon entering the house, Kebron made his way to the room where his father was engaged in study. Dropping the heavy curtains over the door behind him, he advanced a few paces, then fell on his knees and touched the ground with his forehead. "Kebron!" Amaris exclaimed, laying down the roll of papyrus on which he was engaged and rising to his feet.
"What is it, my son? Why do you thus kneel before me? Rise and tell me what has happened."
Kebron raised his head, but still continued on his knees. Amaris was startled at the expression on his son's face. The look of health and life had gone from it, and drops of perspiration stood out on his forehead.
"I have forfeited my life, father. Worse, I have offended the gods beyond forgiveness. This morning I went with Amuba with our bows and arrows to shoot a hawk which has for some time been slaying the waterfowl. It came down and we shot together. Amuba killed the hawk, but my arrow struck a tree and flew wide of the mark and killed Porsus, who was to take the place of the sacred cat in the temple of Bubastes."
An exclamation of horror broke from the high priest.
"Unhappy boy! The king himself could not save his son from the fury of the populace had he perpetrated such a deed."
"It is not my life I am thinking of, father, but first of the horrible sacrilege, and then that some of the consequences must fall upon you and mother and Maissa, for even to be related to one who has committed such a crime is a terrible disgrace."
"As to our share of the consequences, Kebron, we must bear it as best we can. It is of you we must first think. Death is the punishment for slaying a cat. The question is what is to be done. We must fly instantly, though I fear that flight will be vain. Even by this time the discovery may have been made."
"That will hardly be, father, for Amuba has buried the cat among the bushes, and has left the door of the house open so that it may be supposed the cat has wandered away."
"Amuba has done rightly. Then we have at least time to reflect."
"But I do not want to fly, father. Of what good will life be to me with this awful sin upon my head? I wonder that you do not cast me out at once as a wretch who has mortally offended the gods."
"Kebron, I do not view things in the same way as most men. Suffice for you that I do not blame you, still less regard you with horror. The great thing for us to think is the best step to be taken. Were you to fly now, your disappearance would at once be connected with that of the cat as soon as it became known that she is missing, while if you stay here quietly, it is possible that no one will connect you in any way with the fact that the cat is gone. Go and join Amuba in your room, and remain there for the morning as usual. I will see you presently when I have thought the matter fully out and determined what had best be done. Keep up a brave heart, my boy. The danger may yet pass by." Kebron retired, overwhelmed with surprise at the kindness with which his father had spoken to him. On entering the room where he pursued his studies, he found Jethro and Amuba.
"I am sorry for you, young master," Jethro said as he entered. "I came to say that you can rely upon me, and that if you decide on flight, I am ready at once to accompany you."
"Thanks, Jethro.
Should I fly, it will indeed be a comfort to have you and Amuba with me. But at present nothing is determined. I have seen my father and told him everything. He has spoken so kindly that I am amazed. It did not seem possible to me that an Egyptian would have heard of such a dreadful occurrence without feeling horror and detestation at the person who did it, even were he his own son. Your father is a wise as well as a learned man, Jethro said. The real slayer of the cat is the twig which turned the arrow, and I do not see that you are any more to blame than is the hawk at whom you shot. Jethro, Amuba said, you told me you were going to escort Maissa one day or another to the very top of the hills, in order that she could look down upon the whole city. Put it into her head to go this morning. If she goes into the garden, she will at once notice that the cat is lost, whereas if you can keep her away for the day, it will give us more time. But if Ameres decides that you had best fly, I might on my return find that you have gone. Should he do so, Jethro, he will tell you the route we have taken, and arrange for some point at which you can join us. I do not mean to fly, Kebron said, unless it be that my father commands me to do so. Rather, I'll stay here and meet my fate. Jethro would have spoken, but Amuba signed to him to go at once, and turned to his friend. Do not let us talk about it, Kebron, he said. You have put the matter in your father's hands, and you could have no better counselor in all Egypt. And the fact that he holds so high and sacred an office will add to the weight of his words. An hour later a servant entered and told Kebron and Amuba that Ameres wished to speak to them. The two lads bowed respectfully to the high priest, and then standing submissively before him, waited for him to address them. After a pause he said, I have sent for you both, because it seems to me that although Amuba was not himself concerned in this sad business, it is probable that the popular fury might not nicely discriminate between you. He paused as if expecting a reply, and Amuba said quietly, That is what I have been saying to Kebron, my lord. I consider myself fully as guilty as he. I am ready to share his lot, whether you decide that the truth shall be published at once, or whether we should attempt to fly. Ameres bowed his head gravely, and then looked at his son. Father, although I am ready to yield my wishes to your will, and to obey you in this as in all other matters, I would beseech you to allow me to denounce myself, and to bear my fate. I feel that I would infinitely rather die than live with this terrible weight and guilt upon my head. Did I think as you do, Kebron, that the accidental killing of a cat is a deadly offense against the gods, I should say denounce yourself at once. But I do not so consider it. You have frequently asked me questions, my son, which I have either turned aside or refused to answer. Had it not been for this most unfortunate accident, I should never have spoken to you further on the subject. But as it is, I feel that it is my duty to tell you more. I may first tell you what you do not know. I have long been viewed with suspicion by those of the higher priesthood who know my views that the knowledge we possess should not be confined to ourselves, but should be disseminated, at least among that class of educated Egyptians capable of appreciating it. Listen now, and I will tell you how religion first began upon earth, and not only in Egypt. Humans felt their own powerlessness. Looking at the operations of nature, the course of the heavenly bodies, the issues of birth and life and death, they concluded, and rightly, that there was a God over all things. But this God was too mighty for the imagination to grasp. He was everywhere and nowhere. He animated all things, and yet was nowhere to be found. He gave fertility, and he caused famine. He gave life, and he gave death. He gave light, and heat, and rain. He was too infinite and too various for the untutored mind of the early people to comprehend, and so they tried to approach him piecemeal. They worshipped him as the sun, giver of heat and life and fertility. They worshipped him as a destructive god, They invoked his aid as a beneficent being. They offered sacrifices to appease his wrath as a terrible one. And so in time they came to regard all these attributes of his as being distinct and different, and instead of all being the qualities of one god, as being each the quality or attribute of separate gods. And the one almighty god became hidden and lost in the crowd of minor deities. Our forefathers in Egypt worshipped the attributes of God under many different names. First, eight great deities were chosen to typify the chief characteristics of the Mighty One. In time, certain animals, birds, and other creatures whose qualities are considered to resemble one or another of the deities became mixed up with the gods and are beheld almost as the gods themselves. This is, I think, the history of many religions. It is perhaps necessary that it should be so. It is easier for most to worship things that they can see and understand than to worship an inconceivable God without form or shape, so mighty the imagination cannot picture him, and the human mind cannot grasp even a notion of him. The Israelite maid with whom I have frequently conversed tells me that her people, before coming to this land, worshipped only one god, like him of whom I have told you. And it seems to me as if this little handful of people who came to Egypt hundreds of years ago kept the worship of the one god clear and undefiled. Kebron and Amuba listened in silence to the words of the high priest. Amuba's face lit up with pleasure and enthusiasm as he listened to words which seemed to clear away doubts and difficulties that had been in his mind. To Kebron, the revelation, though a joyful one, came as a great shock. His mind, too, had long been unsatisfied. He had wondered and questioned, but the destruction at one blow of all the teachings of his youth, of all he had held sacred, came at first as a terrible blow. Neither spoke when the priest concluded, and after a pause he resumed. You may think that I have told you things which should be told only to those whose privilege it is to have learned the inner mysteries of their religion, that maybe I am untrue to my vows. These are matters for my own conscience. But I should never have spoken had not this accident taken place. When I see that the whole happiness of your life is at stake, that should the secret ever be discovered, you will either be put to death, despairing and hopeless, or have to fly and live despairing and hopeless in some foreign country. I have considered that the balance of duty lay on the side of enlightening your mind. Thus, my son, you can lay aside your horror at the thought that by the accidental slaying of a cat, you have offended the gods beyond forgiveness.
Oh, father, Kebron exclaimed, how good you are! What a weight have you lifted from my mind! I am ready now to fly, should you think it best, or to remain here and risk whatever may happen.
I do not think you should fly, Kebron. In the first place, flight would be an acknowledgment of guilt. In the second, I do not see where you could fly. Tomorrow at the latest, the fact that the creature is missing will be discovered, and as soon as it was known that you had gone, a hot pursuit would be set up. Therefore I say that flight is your last resource, to be undertaken only if a discovery is made. Besides, there is no reason why suspicion should fall upon you more than upon others. But you will have to play your part carefully.